Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Sean and Al's Wrestling Podcast. Here at Sean and Al's Wrestling Podcast, when you zig, we zag. Instead of just talking about how terrible Backlash was and Daniel Bryan jobbing to Rusev and Roman Reigns making people leave the building before the show ended, we're going to have a little fun today. We have an interview coming up with a Scottish writer named Chips about insane championship wrestling. To me, if you are a fan of the American style of pro wrestling and are this mad about WWE, don't spend $120 for lower level tickets to go yell about how much you hate Roman Reigns. Insane Championship Wrestling over in Glasgow, Scotland is actually my favorite company. We're going to talk about them at the end of the show. But first, we're going to start with an interview with a man who is an MMA expert, has been ordering UFC pay-per-views since the very first one. He's also an entertainment industry expert, as he edited a movie magazine for almost a decade. He has interviewed people like CM Punk and Bray Wyatt for that magazine and works out in that world. And he's also my brother, Ed Blair. Ed, how are you doing today?
I am fabulous, little brother. How are you?
I'm doing great. So let's talk about what lit up the internet today. Let's do some positivity. Everybody was so negative this week about WWE. CM Punk has been announced as signing autographs at the Pro Wrestling Tees store in Chicago the day before the All-In show at the Sears Center in suburban Chicago, being put on by Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks. We have a CM Punk UFC fight in a couple weeks. Gentlemen, I'm just going to open the floor here. Is he coming back to wrestling? Is he appearing at this show? Is this his last fight coming up? What's going on? Ed, let's start with you.
Well, as we all know, Mr. Pipebomb himself does what he wants. I don't think there's any dispute about that. He's also a very savvy businessman. This is a guy who I think plans for the future very well. So I think what you're seeing is a couple of things. One, while he turned away from wrestling, I don't think he ever turned away from the wrestling fans. I think he's always appreciated the support that he's gotten.
I can say that because I ran by him on the Chicago lakefront, and he was nice to me when I said I was a fan since the indie days, so yes.
Right. So you got a guy who still is – I mean, look, this isn't totally out of character for him. This is a guy that goes and he goes to – C2E2, which is kind of a Chicago Comic-Con every year. He still does work. He still likes to play with the fans. And, you know, the MMA thing, is there's no permanence there for him. So there's a guy who I think is thinking to himself, if he's ever going to make that jump back, it's best to leave those doors open. And in a certain sense, if it's him being able to give a middle finger to somebody in authority, he's going to take that opportunity. So I think it's three birds, one stone right here for that.
Al, what do you think? Is he coming back to wrestling? Is this his last fight? Is this nothing? Is he not even going to be at the show? What's going on?
I think it's important that we break down what's going to happen in the fight first, because I think that's going to set up what his next move is after that. Ed, can you tell me about the guy that he's fighting? Because I was pretty harsh on this guy. I've never heard of him. I've never seen him fight before. I referred to him as the jobber of all jobbers, or maybe King Jobber. Tell me about this guy. Do you think that CM Punk's got a chance to win?
Well, this is what I love about this. This is, you know, like when you have two undefeated fighters fighting each other, you say somebody's going to lose their O. And that's the case here, except that means that somebody's actually going to get a win, because you have two, not undefeated, but two totally defeated fighters.
We love you, CM Punk. We're not making fun of you.
Yeah, you're my favorite of all time.
No, look, nothing would make me happier than seeing CM Punk win. Nothing would make me more alive in life than watching him slip on a rear naked choke and put this guy to sleep. But here's the thing. MMA is a combat sport. People have to think about combat sports differently than they think about other sports. Combat sports, here's the equivalent. If you're playing a game of basketball and you're down by 15 points with 5 seconds left to go, you might have an opportunity to make a 16-point shot and win the game at the buzzer, despite losing badly the whole way. That's what combat sports is. So you can pull out a victory. We've seen people take absolute beatings. Look at Chael Sonnen. Anderson Silva won. Anderson Silva took a beating for 4.5 rounds and managed to slip on a submission and pull out the W, which is still nonsense. We all know Chael Sonnen is the true champion, the lineal champion. But let's that's a whole podcast for a different day, the greatness that is the American Gangster. But no, he's got a shot. He's been training hard. He's at a great camp up in Milwaukee there with Duke Rufus. It's going to be interesting. And as much as the MMA community is so upset about him being part of the show, because that's ridiculous. That's a side note. The UFC is less of a sport than the WWE at this point. I have no problem saying
wow.
that. Because let's break this down. If you're in the WWE, how do you get a title shot? You have to win the Royal Rumble. You have to go through a bunch of opponents. You have to put in the work to make yourself a contender and then achieve that opportunity. You win the Money in the Bank against some other tough opponents. You get an opportunity. How do you get a title shot in the UFC? You have a good Twitter beef. Your Twitter game is on point. You throw a stool through a bus window. We love you, Conor McGregor, and we'll see you in WWE soon. It's fine. But I'm just saying, it's not that legitimate. So the fact that these people are upset that CM Punk, who will put butts in seats in Chicago and will put money
including ours
in the UFC. Exactly. You two guys, if you're not there, I'm going to be so disappointed.
We've already got tickets. We've got it lined up. We'll be there.
There it is. It's exactly. And this is the thing. He is a good business decision for the UFC. He's going to bring a lot of wrestling fans over. I mean, look, I'm going to guess, this is just ballpark. I'm going to say that at least 1,500 to 2,000 people in that arena will be there partially because CM Punk is on the card.
Oh,
and
I hope so.
Of the gate. I guarantee it.
I hope it's like the 2011 Allstate Arena and just everybody goes crazy for Cult of Personality and it's like him against Cena. I don't know if that's what it's going to be like. I have no idea. But Punk fight in Chicago, I hope it's a fun atmosphere.
As a fan, I mean, I love CM Punk more than any wrestler of all time. And I grew up watching him in the indie scene. I loved everything he did in the WWE. I was devastated the day that he left. All I want to see is CM Punk go out there and get a win. You know, I want to see him get a win in dramatic fashion because, I mean, the way he lost the first time around was hard to watch. But he got paired up against an absolute killer in Mickey Gall. Mickey Gall is an excellent fighter. And for someone like CM Punk that has never had, you know, the type of training that all of the other guys had, he had focused on professional wrestling for a majority of his career, it was very unlikely that he would win his first fight in the UFC. And then on top of the fact that he had to face Mickey Gall, who is, you know, who's a fantastic fighter, he's young. Mickey Gall, there's a chance that he becomes a champion one day, and when he does, CM Punk can feel less bad. But the point I'm going is I want to see him win. I'm just worried that he won't. And then to answer Sean's question about do I think he's going back to professional wrestling, I do. I just don't know if it's going to be at the all-in Ring of Honor pay-per-view.
Well, let me before we get into CM Punk, if he's going to return, let's talk about this fight a little bit more because I got the stats here from Mike Jackson. Record, 0-1-0. KO, 0%. Sub, 0%. Decisions, 0%. Reach, it says 0 inches, which is weird because he has arms. Same thing for legs. Strikes landed per minute, 4. Accuracy, 50%. So CM Punk, like, if it doesn't happen here, this has to be the end of the experiment, right? It can't go any further.
Well, the question becomes, does he love it so much that he's willing to go regional, to go local, you know, to be fighting? Like when I would go watch the fights in East Chicago, Indiana / Gary, and watch these guys. When I was watching Miguel Torres fight back before anybody knew who he was in the high school auditorium, does he want to go that route? I mean, I'm sure it's available to him. I'm sure there's plenty of smaller organizations that would be more than happy to have CM Punk on the card, but it's up to him. I mean, if I'm him, I don't start an MMA career at 40, or at least a winning MMA career. It's just tough. It's tough. It's a physical game. And look, as somebody who's trained martial arts my whole life, and I've been around this in the MMA game, it's not just how hard you can practice and train for several years. there's so much that becomes ingrained into who you are as a person. The way you move as a human being changes. The way you think, the way you function, the way you assess life changes as a fighter. So he doesn't have that. He doesn't have that muscle memory. He doesn't have that just imbued knowledge that's intrinsic to him. It's going to be tough. Now, does that mean he can't win? Absolutely not. He can absolutely go in there and put something on this guy. But I have no idea. I honestly, there's no way to tell. And you know, Alan's not wrong. Mickey Gall was a very tough fight. He was very rangy. He's a big guy with long arms. And he's great on the ground, which is the only place that CM Punk has. Most of his experience was with jiu-jitsu. He studied out here with the Gracies in Torrance, California. That's where he was doing his training before he went up and became an MMA professional with Duke Rufus's Academy. So taking a guy whose biggest strength is also CM Punk's biggest strength was a bad move. They got to put him against a striker that he can try and take down and work on the ground, like you watched the great Chael Sonnen do to Anderson Silva, just in case I haven't mentioned that in the past 5 minutes. That's, to me, what they have to do. And I think this is the best opportunity he's going to get at the UFC. They can't go any lower and still call it a legitimate non-Bellator fight.
Okay, so we'll be there. We'll be cheering for him.
Sure.
But let's get back into that. Let's get into the fun stuff. The fact that he's doing an autograph signing at the Pro Wrestling Tee store the day before the All In show. I guarantee you, when that was announced today, there are people booking cross-country flights because they're convinced that CM Punk is going to be at this show. And if he is not at the show, they're going to be angry, which is their fault because he hasn't been advertised. But clearly they know that this is going to stir up a ton of speculation about him making a return.
Personally, I just think that if you're going to have CM Punk in a wrestling ring for the first time in, what, 4 years?
It'd be like almost 5 years, yeah.
Okay. You would be the most ridiculous, silly promoter of all time if you didn't flood his face on every advertisement, every flyer, every internet advertisement. I just think that's too big of a gamble not to do, because I'm not sure if they've already sold out that venue.
Tickets haven't gone on sale yet, but I think they go on sale like tomorrow, which is kind of a coincidence with this announcement.
If 10 minutes before those tickets go on sale, they announce that CM Punk's going to be there, I think that thing will sell out in a few hours. I really do.
If CM Punk is announced instantly. Right. In Chicago, come on.
Yeah, no, all I can hope for is that is what's happening, and we'll obviously be attending that as well. But yeah, I would love to have CM Punk back in the wrestling ring more than anything. I think, like I said five times, he's my favorite wrestler of all time. I love everything that he does. In my opinion, his matches are the most entertaining that I've ever seen in my life. His ability to work the microphone is just better than anyone I've ever seen. Every single thing he was a part of was interesting. And CM Punk carried us through a miserable, miserable time of wrestling, man. I think people forget how bad it was. There was CM Punk segment, and then there was nothing else I could care less about.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Ed, make the prediction. Does CM Punk appear at this show?
What's the date of the show? What is the date? Let's talk about that.
I believe it's August 30th because
it's Labor Day weekend. Right. So it's like September 1st or something. Yeah.
Right. So Labor Day weekend. Here's my prediction. There will be no announcement made until after his UFC fight, because first of all, he's a focused guy. This is a guy who always says, no, this is what I'm doing. And of course, you don't want to give any idea that he's not 100% focused on his UFC career. So until June 9th, which for wrestling fans, I hope they are aware, is one of the holiest of all weekends in wrestling history. Until June 9th, we'll see nothing. But if he loses, I think there's a chance. If he wins, I'd say no. If he wins, they're going to roll it over. They're absolutely going to roll that momentum. I don't think he's going to be winning.
Oh, so that means we're going to be kind of conflicted then. But like, should we be cheering for him to win or lose when we're at the United Center watching this fight?
We should be cheering for him to win for two reasons. One, it'll be great for wrestling fans. It'll be exciting for us. It's what we want to see. We don't want to leave dejected and sad. And two, the way that these guys take care of themselves nowadays, it can wrestle into their late 40s. So if he needs to do a couple years of MMA, he'll be just fine. I want him to do it. I want him to have a success. If it brings him back a more refreshed, more energetic wrestler, I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
It would be a huge boon to the industry. We'll see. Another topic that kind of touches the WWE-UFC crossover is Brock Lesnar. I don't understand still why he beat Roman Reigns at WrestleMania and at the Greatest Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia. He posted pictures with Dana White in Las Vegas. Are they going to do another deal where he stays with WWE but does fight with UFC? Are there any obvious fights for him that are big money? Why is he still the champion? Why did he win at WrestleMania?
I don't think anybody knows other than the few people in negotiations right now, because other than the UFC's new TV deal, which we'll get to, this is the most confusing thing in the entertainment kind of sports wrestling world right now. Brock Lesnar is savvy. Nobody can do a deal better than this guy. I don't think he's going to leave WWE. The more time that passes, I don't think he's ever going to fully commit back to the UFC and totally leave the WWE like he did back in his first run. At best, you'll get a shared situation. But I'm wondering if, because right now WWE and UFC are competing for TV deals kind of in the same arena, if the WWE has really pushed super hard to keep Brock on, and hence why we're seeing him win instead of jobbing like we thought he would do, give up the title, go do his UFC thing and come back. I'm wondering if, just because these negotiations are getting super intense with this TV situation, if WWE just didn't come through and say, look, we're gonna make it rain dollar bills, y'all,
that
on
was
Brock Lesnar.
That was my conspiracy theory. My conspiracy theory is that WWE and UFC are both going for TV deals right now, and WWE wants their two big stars to be the biggest stars of UFC, and Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey. It makes them look better to the TV networks.
Well, I mean, that's the funny thing about it, is the UFC has three superstars right now. Two of them are employed in the WWE, and one of them is awaiting a court date next month in New York. So it's not good times over in the post-Fertitta UFC Ari Emanuel days. If I'm Vince, I'm squeezing super hard, because he's got the leverage, he's got the talent, he's got the eyeballs. Yeah. That's, I mean, the only thing I can think is that Brock either used, he never intended to go to the UFC, never exclusively, so he used his position to just leverage like he does. I'm gonna go take a picture with Dana. Okay, Vince, now you're gonna pay me an extra mil. Cool. Or WWE really said, we just want to control this market. You know, we have their biggest stars, and Lord knows they could probably make Conor McGregor an offer and snatch him up too.
That would be awesome,
Conor,
if they did that, and
well,
I would love every
always,
second of that.
Conor is always flirting. He is always flirting with the idea. I mean, remember last year when he was sending out tweets and, you know, he was calling out the wrestlers and saying they were trash and garbage. I mean, nobody understands cutting promos better than Conor McGregor does. So if he doesn't end up in WWE someday, I will be shocked. Just like I will be shocked if CM Punk doesn't go back to wrestling someday. I just can't imagine a future where those two gentlemen don't end up in wrestling.
I just, you know, I respectfully disagree. I just, you know, I've taken the stance that I don't think at this point of Brock Lesnar's career, he wants to continue to get punched in the face. And I really think that the WWE and the UFC have really just grown the bond of working together in the business world. And I think that's the only thing that makes any sense on why Brock Lesnar kept the belt and beat Roman Reigns not once but twice. But I still think in wrestling we're going to see Brock Lesnar in that part-time role. We're not going to see him every Raw and every pay-per-view the way that we would want. But if Brock Lesnar were to go to the UFC, I have two guys in mind that I think I'd like to see him fight. And really what I'd like to see is I'd like to see him fight the winner of Cormier and Miocic. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's the only, there's only two fights that make sense. That's one of them. And the other one is him against Francis Ngannou, because Francis Ngannou
is
this gigantic Cameroonian monster who hits like a dump truck. I mean, I honestly thought he knocked Alistair Overeem's little pea head right off his body. I thought for sure he had killed Alistair Overeem. Overeem was going to be dead, or that he had dislocated his spine. He hit him so hard. And even though he wasn't able to do the deal against Stipe, that's a great fight, because that's the ultimate stand-up knockout monster against the ultimate wrestler. And it's, everybody says, you know, Francis is the one guy who can push Brock around. It's like people don't even understand who Brock Lesnar actually is, but
right.
Fine. It's a good hype train. And here's the thing. I'm not going to say you're wrong, because I'm going to say I'm as confused by the situation as any.
Right.
And I will entertain any notion as to why these deals are happening the way they are. It is mind-boggling.
One of the things that I'm really interested...
I was going to say, the only thing I don't know if I agree with is I don't know if Brock doesn't want to get hit in the face, because there's something about, you know, we've all hung around amateur wrestler guys. These guys are just, there's something about them. They're not like other people.
Right.
The Randy Couture's and the Matt Hughes. Like, these guys want to just get in people's faces until the day they die. I mean, look at what, who did we just watch recently at Matt Riddle's Bloodsport? Was it Don Fry? No, not Don Fry. It was,
no, Dan Severn.
The Beast. Dan Severn. Dan Severn's 114 years old, and he is still out there with a sweet mustache just putting hurtings on people, because that's just what he does. That's just what he does. That's what these guys are. So I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe he doesn't want to get punched in the face, or maybe he just wants to make a lot of money, and he's going to do it in a very confusing way. And also, come on, he's not going to lose to Roman Reigns. That's just, I think when you get to the point where you say, yeah, okay, I'll do the job, his pride just probably went, I can't do it. Somebody else, not him. Not him.
Well, I'd like to believe that you're right about that. We weren't going to get too much into backlash, but my God, the backlash against Roman Reigns, no pun intended, in that main event with people leaving and chanting for CM Punk and Rusev Day, and it's getting really ugly on the Roman Reigns front. And if the plan is for him to beat Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam in New York City in front of that crowd,
right?
What do you think for what are they going to do next with Brock? Do you have any ideas?
I have no idea what direction they're going to go, but some things that I would like to see would be Seth Rollins and Brock.
Seth Rollins is what Vince is looking for. He's just a little bit smaller than Roman, but otherwise, he's got the look. He's hugely over with the audience right now. Why not just go with Rollins and give up this 4-year fight over Roman Reigns?
I think that's the best route, and I think that's the thing that makes the most sense for the new direction of professional wrestling where Brock Lesnar doesn't have the belt. What I would do if I was them is I would have Seth Rollins get into the best feud of all time with Finn Balor and let the fans see the match that they want to see in the main event, and then have Brock Lesnar on a part-time thing battle with Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe and guys like that.
Ed, you're a longtime Seth Rollins fan going back to Ring of Honor. What do you think about that?
I have been a Seth Rollins fan since he called himself Tyler Black and worked at a Quiznos in Iowa. That is the guy that I know.
How did you know that? Was that on MySpace?
That was when he was on MySpace, when there was a MySpace. That was when he and I were friends on his MySpace page back in like 2004. Yeah, it's very strange. But this guy, you know, we both talked about this back. We used to watch him in the Frontier Fieldhouse in Chicago, the ROH shows, that he was always going to be a big star. He had the build. He had the ability. He was decent on the mic. He wasn't great in ROH. There were certainly people much better than him, but that was an easy talent for him to work on. Who do you put Brock up against? Brock goes up against anybody. That's the beautiful thing about Brock Lesnar. He's not good. He's not bad guy. He's just his own guy. He's a Heyman guy. So that's who he is. That's kind of like what CM Punk was. It's what The Rock was throughout of his career. It's what Stone Cold Steve Austin was. You get these guys that don't really align themselves with one side or the other, and you can have a lot of success because they can take on all comers. He's just in it for himself. But who, I mean, who's interesting? I mean, Strowman, of course, that's everybody talks about because they match up size-wise.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not going to be Roman, it's Rollins, it's Balor, it's Strowman. I mean, that's pretty much the top faces on the Raw side, unless I'm missing somebody.
I mean, Balor, the problem with Balor, and not as a wrestler, I love the guy, but in the matchup with Brock, their styles are so different. It's just watching him go to Suplex City would probably put a hole in my actual soul that just would never heal. Because, you know, it's like, it would look like when I used to wrestle you when you were 6 and I was, you know, 15 and it was terrible. That's not nice.
Does it make me selfish that I kind of want to see Brock Lesnar fight in the UFC and stay the heavyweight champion? And do you think that there's a way that that can actually happen where both brands are benefited?
Well, you touch on something there that is really a big kind of an issue that the UFC has had. Look, in any fighting combat sport organization, your premium, your gold standard is always going to be your heavyweight division. Look, you talk about greatest boxers, people talk about Ali, and they talk about Foreman and Jack Johnson, the heavyweight champs. Sure, you've got other divisions, and you've got other guys that have been stars, Floyd Mayweather at smaller. But the glory, the grandeur, it all goes to the heavyweight division. And right now, and for a long time, the UFC has had one of the weakest, just tiniest heavyweight pools of any division that they have. It's one of their weakest, if not their weakest division. And that's a horrible thing. Stipe just set the record for title defenses at the heavyweight division with two. Two.
Isn't that crazy?
Who defended. That's it. That's two. I mean, how sad is that, that they've been in business for all these years and they've never had a heavyweight champion defend his title more than two times? It's just like a hot potato over there. So having somebody like a Brock Lesnar, having somebody like Alistair Overeem, who's actually a character, because, look, Stipe is great, but Stipe is also kind of just like an everyman. He's quiet. He's humble. He goes and cleans toilets at his firehouse between fights. I mean, it's not exciting. He's not what you need to market a heavyweight division. Brock Lesnar beating Shane Carwin, getting on top of the fence and punching himself in the jaw. I mean, that is how you sell an organization. So they need him. They need him more than he needs them 10 times more.
It's a great time to be Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, is there a scenario where that can happen? Sure. I mean, money talks. Money talks.
That would be risky. That would be risky if the WWE champion lost a UFC fight. But if he wins,
oh my
then
gosh.
It's like WWE's better than UFC. It's a weird thing.
Yeah, there's no look. This is a very messy situation because you're dealing with a company in UFC that is desperate. They're making desperate moves. Even though they got the TV deal, they are still not in a healthy place. And you've got somebody like Brock Lesnar who is as in demand in two different organizations as a human being can be. And he's got a sweet deal. I mean, look, his WWE contract gets paid more than anybody and wrestles a fraction of what they do. And he's earned that. Don't get me wrong. He's earned that, right? So it just becomes a numbers game. It becomes, what does Brock want, and what are you willing to pay Brock to do it? And that's it. That's the bottom line.
Interesting. As long as he doesn't job to Roman, I think we're all happy, but I don't know if we're going to be happy. So another...
But look, you say that, and you're not wrong, but it's like, okay, is he going to do it at SummerSlam? Because we've been preparing ourselves emotionally for 4 years.
That's true.
For 4 years, we hit... This WrestleMania was peak Roman anxiety. This was it, man. It was to the point where we were just watching going, I don't even want to be looking at this. Like, I'm only here because of Ronda, because of Daniel Bryan, because of anything. I don't want to see this. And then the miracle happened. But then we all went into the Greatest Royal Rumble, peak Roman anxiety, going, okay, well, now we're certain this is where it's going to happen. And lo and behold, I woke up to a text message from my little brother saying, Brock just won't job to Roman.
It's true. I did send you that text, and I was very excited when he crashed through that cage. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Brock and WWE and Roman and this whole push. It's been quite the adventure for 4 years. Another massive WWE UFC crossover is the Ronda Rousey experiment. I think they want her to maybe be the biggest star in the entire company. You watched that match at WrestleMania. What are you thinking of the Ronda Rousey experiment so far?
Well, let me set this up by saying, when she was in the UFC, I was not a big Ronda Rousey fan. I really wasn't. I was ecstatic. I remember when Holly Holm knocked her out, I jumped off my couch and ran around my house for an extended period of time because I was so happy to see it. I watched the replay. I still watch those highlights, and I feel good about myself as a human being, and I'm okay with that. I just didn't like her presentation. I got tired of hearing that she was this world beater and that she could beat Cain Velasquez. And it's like, come on. I get the hype. When Joe Rogan's telling me she's the one in the history of the world type of athlete, I'm like, you're done. You're done. I'm not into that. But in WWE, I have been a huge fan. You know, when it comes to people like her, people like Miz, I've always had this great love for people that no matter where they are in life, they're always championing professional wrestling. They're talking about it. They're showing their appreciation for it. They're cutting promos even though they don't have to just because that's what they are. So for her, she's always had this love, and I was rooting for her. And we all said, Mike's skill's going to be weak if her athleticism can pull her through. But she was the star of WrestleMania. I think you can almost say that was an objective fact, that she was the biggest thing. And let's take it back when you and I saw her team up with The Rock for that little bit where she was wearing her It's Over 9,000 t-shirt and she got in the ring years ago.
Yeah, WrestleMania 31, yeah, in San Jose.
Yeah.
Her and The Rock confronting.
We were in that building, and that was the biggest pop of the night. The wrestling crowd loves her, and she had it ready. She had it ready. They were ready for her, and she gave them everything that they needed. And she's been great. She has been fabulous, and now they're bringing in the rest of her three horsewomen. All four of them all have deals now. And it'll be very interesting to see. But she's exceeded expectations. Her athleticism makes her one of the best potential wrestlers, I think, there. And I'm excited. I'm all on board the hype train. I just want to see how far it goes.
Do you think she could headline Mania next year with Charlotte, as people are speculating?
Well, if it means I don't have to watch Roman Reigns headlining match, you're not taking a step down there at all. Because when you're the problem is, and this is an issue that we've had, you know, as we've all, the three of us here have all been to many WrestleManias, and let's be honest, by the time we get to the headlining match, we're exhausted. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
The one that probably has the most energy was Cena Rock Miami.
Yeah.
Because it was the right crowd, the right time, everything worked. But in so many other times, it's, you know, after basically 7 hours of a show where we've been to 14 shows in the past 4 days in some town that we've traveled to and are, you know, sleeping 2 hours in a hotel, it's like we're exhausted by the time that final match comes and we've still got Raw and SmackDown the 2 days after. So in terms of it being a headlining match, could it be? Absolutely. Absolutely, because WrestleMania is less about the headlining matches than it used to be. I mean, it used to be, you know, the mega powers collide, and it could be Warrior and Hogan. It used to be just the headliner, and everything else was kind of whatever. But nowadays, and what was the biggest pop in Orlando last year was the Hardys coming back. Not even announced, but it was the highlight of the show for a lot of people. That place exploded. In fact, that place exploded so much that my little brother, your host, lost his credit card at that exact moment.
Yeah, we don't have to go into that. That's true. I was at the bar, and lost my credit card. And I was really excited about hearing that music.
You bring your brother onto the show. This is what's going to happen. It's going to get a little bit of thing, but it's true. He came back, and he had lost his credit card because he was so excited when that Hardy's music hit, as we all were. As we all were. It just means that I paid for his food for the rest of the trip. It's fine. Not holding it against it. But that's what I'm saying. It's not about the headlining matches. So could Ronda Rousey headline a WrestleMania? I think it would be brilliant if she did. Her and Charlotte, why not? If it means I'm not getting Roman on the top of the card, you have my blessing. Please do it.
Our last crossover topic then is the fact that they're both negotiating TV deals right now. Fox has supposedly been interested in both. TV rights are just a massive part of the game right now. They make hundreds of millions off of this. It props up the company. And UFC just signed a deal with ESPN, correct?
It is the weirdest deal, and I don't understand it, and I don't like it, and I'm unhappy with it, and here's why. So, for those of you who don't know, UFC signed a deal with ESPN to be streamed on their ESPN Plus app. Now, the ESPN Plus app is essentially the Danny DeVito in this twin scenario if the Arnold Schwarzenegger is ESPN, meaning it's the leftover crap. It's where they show CFL, they show cricket, and it doesn't have anything to do with what you get on regular ESPN. You're going to get one Major League Baseball game a day. You're going to get one NHL game a day. And then you're going to get a bunch of sports you've never heard of. That's what you're paying $5 a month for. And this is where the UFC is putting their 12 or 15 original pieces of programming. It doesn't make any sense. And you pay $5 a month for the streaming, and you still get advertisements. Not as many, but you're still getting advertisements. Everything that I've seen in terms of the feedback from the fans, they're just scratching their heads. Nobody wants to do this because a lot of the UFC fans are already paying for the UFC streaming app, and now the Fight Pass, and now they're going to have to pay for a second app that only gives them part of the stuff while still having to pay for pay-per-views. So you essentially have to put money into three separate pools to, if you're a UFC fan. As a WWE fan, I can watch the stuff on TV, or I watch it on Hulu, but Hulu doesn't just give me WWE. It gives me Raw and SmackDown and a million movies and TV shows that I actually like. And then I have my app for my WWE app for $9.99. So I don't understand what they're doing. I don't understand who at ESPN looked at this and said, that's worth $170 million a year. For $5 per person times all the other sports, I think the problem is ESPN has over-leveraged themselves. They've bought the right to do everything because cord cutters are really putting a dent in the pocket. If you've never seen how it breaks down, ESPN gets one of the biggest chunks of your cable bill compared to all the other channels out there because they're not a subscription thing like HBO or Showtime. So out of your whole cable bill, ESPN gets like $4 or $5. It's pretty hefty. So it's really weird. It's a stink deal. And I think now that that part's done, you're going to see this battle with Fox. And here's the other thing. Disney, who owns ESPN, is still making a bid, I think, for Fox, which means Fox could do a deal with UFC and then ultimately get bought by Disney, who owns ESPN. And then it's very confusing. It's very confusing. I don't understand it. Nobody does. The numbers don't make sense. The UFC is in one of the worst financial places they've been. The numbers are declining in their viewership. They can't put together a card. I mean, just today, what happens? They got their big jiu-jitsu girl who's supposed to be the new It Girl Cute. She comes in 7 pounds overweight. Not a pound, but 7 pounds overweight. And she's probably going to get knocked out tomorrow.
Right.
If we're talking about Mackenzie Dern, the girl from Arizona with that super weird Brazilian accent, who 3 years ago spoke like a regular Valley girl, and now she speaks like she's never spoken English, and she's, you know, how you say, talk about no respect, nice. It's very strange. It's
but, so you know, you're out there in Los Angeles. There's these rumors that we could actually end up with Raw on the Fox network. Like, that's how crazy things have gotten with cord cutting and networks just desperate for eyeballs, where pro wrestling for the first time in 50 years could return to network TV. I mean, do you think that's actually possible that we could see Raw Mondays on Fox being advertised during the Super Bowl and World Series and things like that?
Vince is smart. Vince is a great businessman. The difference is when he makes deals moving forward, he's doing it from a place of a healthy company that's not begging for handouts. The UFC is the opposite of that. This is a place where they are trying to find anything to make money. Look who they teamed with. They teamed with Reebok. Reebok doesn't actually sponsor real sports anymore. Their biggest sponsorship is CrossFit. So if you're a middle-aged mom who wants to do power lifts for time in a parking lot behind a strip mall in the San Fernando Valley, you're Reebok core demographic now. You're the athletes we're talking about. WWE is out there doing big-time donations. They're out there working with organizations. They're being silently political but apolitical. They're having huge markets. You guys remember the days when we could walk into Target and Toys R Us and there were UFC action figures? We could buy Royce Gracie and Chuck Liddell's and Tito Ortiz's right off the shelf. Jack specific toys and Mattel toys right next to wrestling figures. That was fabulous. I still got my Brock. I still got my Royce Gracie with his little gi. Now, there's none of that. They don't have any marketing. They don't have any toys. They have nothing that connects me. I don't know who these guys are. I watch this stuff. I live this stuff. And I go, who are these guys? So it's a real problem. And what I think is, will we see WWE on a network again? Of course. I mean, come on. When I grew up, Saturday night's main event, that was the jam. That's what I was talking about. So I think it's a very real possibility. Also, WWE is more family-friendly than UFC. UFC is still a tough pill to sell. I mean, let's never forget the disaster that was the first box card on UFC, where for some reason they decided to only have one fight between Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez that ended in like 92 seconds. This big hour of build-up for this fight that went shorter than a bathroom break. That doesn't make any sense. So it's just, I am so confused. I am so sorry. I don't want to sound confused, but I don't know who's making decisions at this company and why people are still paying them. Well, I love UFC. I love MMA, but I'm lost right now.
One of the most interesting parts that I find is that ESPN is also a struggling company. And so for ESPN to pair up with UFC right now, it's like, in a weird way, they're kind of combining two companies that just aren't doing well. 3 weeks ago, SportsCenter got its lowest ratings in 20 years. And so for the UFC to make that decision that they want to pair up with them, man, isn't that kind of a risky decision on their part?
I think it's 100% risky, but I think that ESPN is so over-leveraged on owning all this content. I mean, when I saw the sports they were going to show on ESPN Plus, I was like, who decided to buy CFL rights at ESPN? Like, somebody like, this is really going to be a big one for us, guys. Or were they just giving them away? Like, they're going to show rugby.
Our dad watches the CFL games.
But to be fair, our let's not get into dad's sports pecuniarities. It's a very strange thing. But look, they show rugby sevens. Rugby sevens isn't even full international rugby. It's like the 3-on-3 street ball version of rugby. And that's going to be there before or after the UFC. And it doesn't make sense. I think the WWE is in a better position. They have a bigger viewership. They're a healthier company. They're more family friendly. And now that the ESPN has this weird streaming deal, I think it's very possible that you see WWE. And I mean, I think they have their, you know, look, they've got their Hulu deal. I don't know what that's worth. But the fact that their Hulu's getting Raw and SmackDown immediately following, they're probably making some good coin off that. It's WWE's in a good place. They will land somewhere nice.
Being out there, you know, in LA in the entertainment industry, you've been very impressed with the media they've gotten from this Saudi Arabia show, which was somewhat controversial.
Well, this is to me one of the most fascinating things that professional wrestling has ever been involved with. If you look just today, ESPN put out another article about the cultural and social significance of this show. I mean, if you haven't seen the oil rumble, and whoever coined that term, by the way, genius, just fabulous. But the greatest Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia, this is the first time I have seen WWE written about in the Wall Street Journal, in USA Today, on political blogs, and all in a positive manner. And not about earnings reports or anything like that, or about the fact that Linda McMahon is part of, you know, the Trump administration, but talking about that the WWE is at the forefront of what is actual, real, significant cultural changes in what is a very tough place for a lot of people. And look, we're not going to say, look, we're not here to condone or disparage what's going on over there. But the fact that they're this kind of press, still continuing to this day, weeks after the event went down, is a true milestone. I mean, Vince has put them in a position, and probably Triple H and Stephanie, because a lot of great decision makers there. What is happening is really just incredible. I'm amazed that, like I said, today I woke up, first thing my ESPN app tells me is the Saudis are enjoying these increased freedoms and these increased exposure to Western culture, and WWE is at the forefront of that. It's incredible to me.
Yeah, it's quite the coup for Vince. A lot of controversy with the women not being allowed to be on the show, but it's something that's probably going to be both financially and publicity-wise a positive thing in the long term. I know one other thing that you wanted to talk about from the fun we had last year in Orlando is the fact that Keith Lee appears to be NXT bound.
So Keith Lee, I'm sure most of you guys out there, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know Keith Lee. Keith Lee has been in PWG out here. He's in California. He's been part of AAW that runs out of Chicago. In fact, he was the PWG champion up until recently when he had to give up the belt to Walter. It's all caps. You got to yell it when you say it. And then he gave kind of a big going away speech at the AAW show the week before that. And he had done the shows at Access down in New Orleans, where he got to go against Cassius Ohno, another KO after Kevin Owens was made KO. But that's a whole, the WWE naming thing is still a mystery to me. But like we talked about, Keith Lee was a guy that we saw down in Orlando at one of the Flow Wrestling shows in an old sports complex way out in Orlando, and an old highlight facility. And he put on a heck of a show, because this is a show. The Flow Wrestling shows were basically built around Matt Riddle, who is one of my top three blue chippers, along with Kenny Omega, and then Keith Lee being the third one. But these shows were destined to be showcases for Matt Riddle. And as Keith Lee comes out and he's mid-card, he puts on a heck of a show. He's got that old-school power lifter build, but he's incredibly athletic, great on the mic, great worker. Everybody says he's the nicest guy. So we said, look, we're going to keep an eye on him. He's made a lot of noise in the underground, but he seems primed. And when the moves were made that he had to drop the belt at PWG, and he gave a speech at AEW, and he showed up on Access, the thoughts were that everything was pointing towards an NXT contract. And sure enough, the announcement just comes through a few days ago that it looks like Keith Lee is going to be an NXT guy. And I really think if you haven't seen him, pay attention.
I love your passion for Keith Lee.
Look, when we see people who impress, we see people who impress, and we want to support.
I mean,
them.
Pat yourself on the back. Like some of the guys that you saw back at the Frontier Fieldhouse that you called out right away.
Absolutely, and that was back in the day before Vince was really taking small guys. I remember when they finally took Matt Sydal, Evan Bourne, who is maybe 5'4". I'm sorry. I don't want to throw shade at him, but I'm 5'6". And I remember seeing the top of his head when he and I were in the bathroom at the Frontier Fieldhouse. So that actually sounded horrible the way I said that. but not focused on that. Meaning I felt like I was just a little taller than he was. Okay? So please, not take it too weird. All right. So let's compose ourselves. Now what I'm saying now is Keith Lee's got everything he needs to be a star, and you really need to pay attention to this guy, because he could be one of these guys that passes through NXT relatively quickly. I don't think he's going to get stuck there. Maybe a year, 18 months, and they'll bump him up. He's definitely got the potential to be very significant.
All right. Sounds good. I think we've got everything covered. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Wait, I do want to end with just one point, if I might.
Oh, go ahead.
If I might. Two things. One, I think we should let's go around the table. So just in the past few weeks, we've had a new album from Godsmack, a new album from Shinedown, both of which had songs featured. One was the theme song for Mania. One was the theme song for the Greatest Royal Rumble. Having listened to the albums, they are full of songs ripe for WWE. I'm just curious. Do we have a pick on who we think wins for most songs from their album? used as WWE themes over the course of the next year, Shinedown or Godsmack?
That's a tough question, man. I think both those albums are incredible. I'm not going to lie to anyone. I was listening to the Shinedown album on the way here, mentally preparing myself for this podcast. I'm going my boys from Shinedown, though. I think that CD's, I think they rock the house, man.
Sean, how about you, buddy?
I can't go against Shinedown, even though Godsmack was an ECW, commercial. Shinedown's bringing it strong right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's some great stuff on the Godsmack album. Shinedown has that song, Monsters. My monsters are real, and they know how to kill. Oh, you hear that chorus, you're like, you could just picture Brock just working people over. It just gets me pumped. Just seeing the promo they're going to cut. I mean, sure, the gold standard is still the Creed, My Sacrifice, Stone Cold Steve Austin promo. We all know that. We accept that.
Greatest of all
time.
But
these two bands, yeah, greatest of all time. But these two bands are fabulous, and if you haven't checked out the new albums and you like this stuff, I'm telling you, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. But my final point, I just want to say, as a huge Enzo Amore fan, yes, I am glad he was not part of the company when they went to Saudi Arabia, because if there's anybody on the roster most likely to end up in Saudi Arabian prison, it would be Enzo Amore. And if you've ever seen the movie Midnight Express about the guys that got thrown in the Turkish prison, also it is where the wrestling, where the tag team got their name and theme song from. We just don't want little Enzo in a Saudi prison, and then Big Cass has to come visit him, and he's, you know, pressing his nipples up against the glass. Oh, Enzo, we just don't want that. So let's just be thankful that Enzo is safe again from terrible, terrible things that would happen to him from his bad choices in life.
All right. That is a good way to close it out. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll have you on again soon.
You're the man, Ed.
Looking forward to it, guys. Thank you.
All right. We're going to close out this episode of Sean and Al's Wrestling Podcast with an interview with a Scottish wrestling writer, our friend Chips. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to everybody?
Hi, I'm Chips. I write about ICW mainly as a sort of wrestling writer, and I've branched out to a few other indie promotions before, but I'm just sort of someone who's really passionate about wrestling, independent wrestling especially, and, well, to be honest, ICW especially, and I write sort of reviews every so often, and just wanted to be a guest on the podcast. Me and Sean had a sort of very similar interests in ICW, and I know Sean's really passionate about sort of getting ICW out there more to a wider audience. So
let's give you a plug. What site is it where people can find your work?
I write on Fight Booth Pro Wrestling. It's a site that sort of covers all sorts of companies, really. It's got WWE, Impact, Ring of Honor, New Japan, and quite a few indies. ICW is currently the only British indie on there, because I'm trying to sort of spearhead our country's division. So, but hopefully more and more will come up from there. But I'm going to have, by the time this podcast comes out, I should have a review up about, a written review of the Baromania show, which we'll be talking about today. And yeah, if you ever want to talk to me about wrestling of any sort.
Yeah, and they just announced, I just saw on Twitter that Progress is coming over here to Chicago. So that's interesting. So I guess I'll get to go to my first Progress show. I prefer ICW, but Progress is cool. So, for people who are wondering, why are we talking about a Scottish independent wrestling promotion, let me just give my little speech about Insane Championship Wrestling and why I love this company so much. If you're a fan of the classic American style of professional wrestling and you're unsatisfied with what you're getting in the mainstream right now, instead of spending hundreds of dollars to go heckle Roman Reigns and chant negative things during main events, there is this company that I think is providing a great alternative product. My favorite wrestling of all time was ECW, and this, to me, reminds me so much of ECW. And also the Memphis style of wrestling, and the fact that they have a lot of chaos, brawling characters, feuds, storylines. It's the type of wrestling that I really love. And
if you don't believe me, you don't just have to take me and Chip's word for it. Triple H appeared in an ICW ring, putting over the quality of the product, which I don't believe he's done for any other independent company. And more significantly to me personally, you can find a video on YouTube of Paul Heyman going to Glasgow and giving this like emotional speech to Mark Ballas, the owner of ICW, about what a great job he's doing and how he's building something special. And in the 17 years since ECW went out of business, I've never seen Paul Heyman give that type of, you know, recommendation to another company. So to me, those are some big kudos there. So yeah, how would you sum up ICW and why it's special and why it appeals to you?
There's quite a few reasons that ICW is the company that's sort of near and dearest to my heart. But yeah, I'd say it's definitely got a ECW vibe from what I've watched in sort of going back in sort of ECW terms on the network. It's got a lot of, there's definitely a lot of chaos. I agree with pretty much everything you've said, to be honest.
Sorry, I didn't mean to take all your thunder.
No problem at all. No, yeah, it's just there's a lot of chaos. There's quite a lot of they've done quite a few angles in the past that have very much blurred the lines between sort of real and predetermined and, you know, sort of like shoot style things that have happened in certain angles. And I think we'll be covering something that has elements of that in the upcoming Baromania talk we have. But that's sort of something that...
Yes, absolutely. I know what you're talking about. And yeah, what you're talking about, that way they blur the lines. Again, that reminds me of classic ECW, classic Memphis back in the 80s. It's why I'm such a fan of the product. So just like, what's the general sense? You know, I'm just kind of a dumb American. I don't really understand, you know, how the Europeans view things. What's the view of ICW over there? Are they viewed as being a pretty major indie, kind of like, you know, them in progress?
Yeah, ICW and Progress are definitely the two British indies that are on sort of the radar of most people. I could never quite say which one of them would be the bigger of the two, but they run in very different areas. Obviously, like Progress is based London based, sort of very south of England, and ICW is obviously Scottish. So they're not so much in competition, but you know they're very much the two heavyweights that have. And the sort of the two companies that have the most contact, I'd say, with WWE, with them getting sort of having the odd WWE signed wrestler come across and either have a match or just maybe.
Oh, like, yeah. I mean, clearly a relationship there. Triple H, you know, appearing at an ICW show, Cassius Ohno wrestling Joe Coffey last year. Mm-hmm. And I just can't wait for, I want them to be on the network. I want them to get that exposure to take kind of a next step. Which is kind of leads me to my next question here. Again, I'm just an American who doesn't know my European geography as well as I should. ICW, I feel like they should be growing more than they are. I think it's just such a fantastic product. Are they limited by being based in Glasgow as opposed to Progress being based in London and having, you know, just a bigger population to draw from?
Yeah, I think London's definitely the bigger of the cities. And I do think that Progress generally runs bigger locations just in terms of where they, just in terms of like where they can geographically go. They do sort of like Manchester, Birmingham, kind of like very big key cities. Whereas in Scotland, I'd say Edinburgh and Glasgow are the two biggest cities, but they're still quite a bit smaller. So I think geographically they're a little bit more limited, but they've reached a very high point right now. And I do think they're at a sort of steadier growth than maybe through some of the time that ICW have been around, they've grown a lot quicker. And I think now they're sort of the healthy, steady growth phase, really. And I mean, I still think they're one of the biggest indie companies around, really. I think if you were going to list even worldwide the top 10 biggest indies, I think ICW would be on that list. So, I mean, I think
I'm not knocking their success. I love ICW, and I want to see them explode like ECW did, where they were, you know, ECW had the advantage of being in America and based in the Northeast, and they could go to New York and Chicago and all these things, and maybe ICW is a little more limited because I just think they have such a fantastic product. So let's get into the current product. Baromania happened last weekend. I'm telling you, folks, if you had a chance on spending $10 and it was between Baromania or Backlash, you should have gone Baromania. It was a fantastic show, in my opinion. Actually, in my opinion, and I tweeted this to Mark Gallis, and he agreed with it, I thought it was the best top-to-bottom card in the history of the company. What was your opinion of that show?
I find it hard to disagree with that, to be honest. There's been some... I've really enjoyed a lot of shows in ICW's sort of back catalogue, but I can't think of one that outright has as many... There's not a bad match on the card. The entire... If we go through every match coming up to sort of discuss things, then...
Every match had a purpose. Matches were different. Different styles, different storylines, different types of feuds. I just thought it was tremendous up and down the card.
Yeah, and alongside that, there were so many surprises. There's a lot of shocking moments. I didn't see... There was maybe at least 5 or 10 different moments that I didn't see coming in terms of sort of big returns and heel turns and just all sorts, really. It was a show that had something for everyone.
Yeah, so where has Joe Coffey been the last few months? He just showed up and set up a match with his brother, Mark Coffey, for the big Shugs Hoose Party, or however that's pronounced. Where's Joe been?
Joe's been... There's definitely a lot of indies I've seen Joe performing on, but I think ICW did a really good job of sort of... Joe Coffey had been, you know, the top guy for maybe 6 months before he then sort of disappeared for another 6 months, maybe. So I think they've sort of done a really good job of having him just sort of disappear and have a few other key players rise up through the ranks, because there's a wealth of talent on the roster. But I think that he's just been wrestling other indies. He's been in a lot of other Scottish promotions. He's been on. He's spent quite a lot of time at Defiant Wrestling, which was previously What Culture. He's just been around. But I think they just wanted to leave him for a little while so that when he came back, there'd just be a huge reaction for him as a sort of a ICW megastar at that point, and I thought it really worked.
Yeah, so you think they were just kind of letting him freshen up, take some time away from the promotion, come back with some steam. It wasn't something where there was any trouble with him in the company or anything like that.
Not as far as I'm aware of, but I mean, I wouldn't like to say for definite.
Let's talk about the match that everybody's talking about at that show and what you were talking about in terms of reality and fiction being blended. The Jackie Polo Lionheart match. I don't even totally understand all of the hype that went into it, but apparently it was like this deeply personal feud that goes back 5 years. I think after Lionheart broke his neck, Jackie Polo tweeted something sarcastic about, he's going to retire again because he had a prior retirement he didn't stick to. So they had this very personal build that maybe you could tell us a little bit about. And I wasn't sure if they could live up to the hype of the match. I thought it was phenomenal. It was a great, great match.
Yeah, this was the match of the night as well. This was the match that exceeded all my expectations and really did. It lived up to all the hype and just was the match that kept me gripped to the screen the entire way through. I really enjoyed it was very physical. There was just a constant slight feeling of concern that even though you knew both these guys are, you know, professionals who've been doing this for years, that there could be a level of disdain for each other that could have caused things to, you know, maybe not go as smoothly as it did. And it was it was really good, very personal, very concerning. I think you covered most of the things I know about the feud, because it's sort of murky territory for anyone who's watching, really, exactly what the issues between these two are. There's just a lot of backstage. There's a lot of backstage, like, locker rooms where they've been divided over which of these two people they sort of are almost aligned with. There's been a lot of, retirements and injuries and just a lot of nasty comments on each side from what I've been able to glean, but it's a very personal feud, and I think ICW built it really well up to the show as well with the, you know, will they, won't they, lots of concerning contract signings, and then, I mean, it all started with the...
Oh, I loved how they were having Jackie not sign the contract.
Yeah, that lasted... He liked to drag that out for everyone, didn't he, Jackie?
Oh, he was cracking me up. He just had that straight face, wouldn't crack. I thought it was tremendous. That segment in Newcastle with Lionheart and Mark Dallas, the contract signing, Mark Dallas taking that rock bottom. I thought that was all really compelling TV.
Yeah, no, I definitely wasn't expecting the match to live up to the build and the sort of the level of backstage concerns leading up to the match, and it very much did. It was a brilliant physical match, and I unexpectedly as well, Jackie Polo was the one who, you know, got the victory as the sort of bad guy who was going to be retiring. So I don't really know where this goes from here, but it's exciting to see.
Yeah, what was that about? Because then Lionheart was like shaking hands with Billy Kirkwood, and is he leaving, you think? Is there something up there?
I think it could be kind of another similar to Joe Coffey situation where maybe Lionheart will disappear for a while. I don't think he's done. They say it quite a lot in commentary, but Lionheart sort of had the main title of pretty much all of the Scottish independent shows other than ICW, and I don't think he'd ever quit until he'd reached the top of ICW as well.
Okay. Well, we might as well talk about, we haven't even gotten to the biggest news of the night. The main event was BT Gunn against Mikey Whiplash in a death match. And Stevie Boy cashed in his Square Go contract and won the championship. What did you think of that whole scenario playing out?
This was so much chaos, so much going on in this match. We had, you know, a big cash in. I expected if Stevie Boy was going to cash in, it would be at the end of the grueling match and not sort of joining in midway through, which was almost faintly noble of him. I wouldn't go that far, but, you know, a little bit. The run-up to this feud has just been Mikey Whiplash having weekly death matches, and it's been very compelling, hard-to-watch television. If you're a fan of the hardcore-style wrestling, then this match and the preceding matches, which, you know, will all be up on the ICW On Demand as well, if you wanted to play catch-up, you know, this is your sort of stuff. If you enjoy a bit of blood, then Mikey Whiplash is probably your guy. But yeah, the cashing in was, I mean, I expected Stevie Boy, if you think about it, it makes sense that after a death match, you're not going to get any more weary competitors than that. So it's the perfect time to cash in the Square Go. It definitely makes him look, you know, like an intelligent contract holder. So I think, I mean, he obviously made the right decision being our new champion now.
Yeah, another swerve in the evening. James Storm, who our listeners will know, was appearing there and turned heel on poor Ravy Davey and broke a bottle over his head. So is he going to be sticking around for a while and working a program?
It seems that way, yeah. I'm excited. I really like James Storm, and I think he's quite a good fit in ICW. It's just, you know, everyone at ICW likes drinking. Everyone at ICW enjoys, you know, a bit of a renegade, and I think he fits in well. And, you know, unfortunately for Ravy Davey, he's the one who fell victim to all this. But Ravy Davey is sort of our perpetual beaten and battered underdog who just, you don't really get past a big show without seeing him utterly brutalized by someone. And this was the person who beat him up this time.
Yeah, he's taken some brutal beatings. Him and Bram had that feud. They had that match the night before, the Hydro, that I thought was spectacular. So he's a really fun underdog character. Kenny Williams turns heel. This was surprising to me. He always seemed like such a likable baby face. But they did the thing where he went and joined with Red Lightning.
Yeah, this was sort of surprising. A few people had sort of posed the idea to me, who I talked to about ICW, that they thought that if Kenny was going to lose this match, that maybe Rudo, the Rudo Entertainment brand, which is Red Lightning's sort of heel stable, would, you know, try and find a way to get him back in. So, I mean, I guess they got that right, but I was with you. I didn't think, I mean, Kenny Williams is about as, has been as sort of pure baby face as it gets, really. Really, like, a very likable, high-flying, fun wrestler that, you know, all the fans are behind. But I'm sort of excited to see what he does as the villain of the piece for a while. I think he could move even further up the card, and I mean, you know, he's already been pretty high up, so we could have a contender for Stevie Boy fairly early on, because the crowd want to cheer Stevie Boy as much of a dick as he is.
And another surprise to me, this was actually at the show in Newcastle, was the Jester and Shawn Samuels team beating Ashton Smith and Rampage Brown. I thought Smith and Brown were like an awesome, like, Brock Lesnar tag team that was just destroying everybody, and I was kind of surprised to see them lose the title so quickly. Do you think they're going to stick around as a team in ICW?
I'm not sure, because we had Rampage Brown in the Zero G title scramble match to open the show as a solo entrance. So, I mean, it could go either way. I also thought they were a really good, just like heavy hitting, dominant team. To prop up that division. So I wasn't expecting it either. I was really happy, because I love Shar and Jack are a great team. They're one of my favourites. They're fun and, you know, kind of incredibly silly with the alcohol antics and the stage diving, despite being huge. So I see a lot of terrified fans hoping that they don't get stage dived on by those two. So, but yeah, I didn't expect Ashton and Rampage to lose that just before the Baromania show, but it shook things up, I guess. I'm not sure either way. I hope they don't go away for too long. I hope they stick around as a tag team or come back in a couple of months, maybe do a little bit of singles action. But no, I thought they were a really good just dominant big guy nasty team.
I completely agree. I loved watching them. I hope they do come back. I mean, I love Pinky Party. I think they're a fantastic act. I was just surprised that that title change so quickly. So we'll see where they go from there. And I guess we'll kind of finish here by just talking about the fact that the big announcement for the major show in July is Walter. How do you think Walter is going to go over with the ICW crowd?
I think ICW fans, they enjoy some pretty physical action, and you don't get much more hard hitting than Walter. So I can't see him going down badly, to be honest. I think that'll be good. I think he'll play a good part there, and hopefully they keep him around. ICW fans are kind of notorious for being one of the harder fans to please. A lot of big names in British indies will be doing really well in other places, and when they come to ICW, they'll just sort of not be that big a deal. Like Tyler Bate, for example, the first WWE UK champion, he has had a couple of runs in ICW, but I think it just, you know, the odd match, but I think his sort of reaction, or the feud they've put him in, or even just a few matches they've put him in, has sort of, you know, not been quite enough. So you never quite know with ICW fans if they're gonna take someone, whether they're a big name or not.
Yeah, well, I love the company. I think they're doing a tremendous job. I think they're a great alternative. It's ICW on demand. I think it's $10 a month. It's totally worth the price. I'm telling you, if you paid for Backlash instead of Baromania, you are just taking a wrong step. So I want to thank Chips for joining us here today. We're definitely going to have him back on to talk ICW in the future. Again, he writes for fightboothpw.com, and you can follow him at Fish Chips Whips. And anything else?
No, I think that's great. It's been really fun talking. And yeah, anytime you want me to come talk about some Scottish wrestling, I'm here.
We'll do it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening today, everybody, and we'll be back a little bit later this weekend with a review of Backlash, Raw, SmackDown, and all the craziness going on in the world of WWE.